down to my bones. After a moment of making sure the kickstand would hold the dirt bike up, he used his shirt to wipe the grime from his hands. I took the hand he offered, giving it a squeeze. With one last glance over his shoulder at his find, we made our way to where Cole stood in front of a towering stack of pallets. We were right behind him when I finally made the connection and realized what we were looking at. I'd seen cardboard boxes like this before and recognized the phrasing printed along the outside. 10x24 hours rations, GP NATO, OTAN approved.
What are we looking at exactly?
Liam asked. Humanitarian rations, I said, cutting Cole off. I felt hollow at the sight. Do you know what country they're from?
You've seen these before?
Cole asked, brows raised.
The government has this stuff under lock and key. They didn't take any of this crap to HQ either.
It was in... I released Liam's hand, stepping closer to the boxes so I wouldn't have to see his face, as I said. It was when we were in Nashville. The military was housing food and medical supplies in an old airport hangar. The raid was like a night tide in my memory. It constantly seeped up from the darkest corners of my mind to catch me off guard, lay me low. Liam, so pale as he struggled to breathe, the knife in my back... Jude's quiet bravery as he stepped out in front of all of us and sent electricity shooting toward the soldiers. Losing sight of the others. Rob.
The muzzle.
Blood on a broken windshield. I turned my back on the boxes and pallets, but forced myself to stand still until the crushing weight lifted off my chest and I could breathe again. It was getting harder to outrun its reach.
Okay, Liam said finally. But where did this stuff come from? And how old is it? A few years, but most of this stuff is non-perishable. Meant to last. I just forgot it was here until I saw an inventory list in the office.
Cole pulled a small knife out of his back pocket and flicked the blade out. He gutted the box, letting the red, individually wrapped packages of food spill out at our feet. There was a simple image of a man bringing food to his mouth and a Chinese flag.
We heard rumors that the government was trying to hide humanitarian aid other countries were airdropping. That whole, we're America, we can do it ourselves, everyone else has abandoned us bullshit. This load was left somewhere in Nevada.
You never used them? I asked.
Never had to, Cole said. We had food suppliers. Albin wanted it as evidence of how Gray was working against the public, but nothing ever came from it. This building is filled with half-baked ideas, lost trains of thought.
He shut his eyes, rubbing his forehead with the back of his hand. I saw the way his grim expression seemed to twist with pain in the second before he turned to Liam.
If you get this place in order, then fine. Consider yourself quartermaster. You can figure out a way to bring in supplies. Supplies meaning food, cleaning supplies, sundries. Liam said. If you're thinking that I have a way of getting you guns... No shit, kid.
Cole interrupted.
We're going to have to work Senator Cruz's connections for gas, weapons, and the mountain of ammunition we'll need. Exactly how much do you think that'll be?
Liam asked, alarmed.
We're fighting what? One or two key battles? Not a whole damn war. You worry your pretty little head about breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Cole fired back.
Let the big kids do the hard thinking.
I sent him a withering look he ignored, and he stooped to pick up one of the daily ration packs from the ground. He tossed it from hand to hand, his forehead creased in thought.
But it doesn't solve the bigger issue we have now. Based on the plans that are coming out of that room, we're going to need a lot more bodies working with us. Another 2 dozen kids at least for a camp hit. If you have any bright ideas on how to find them... I'm all ears.
A tired kind of resignation wove in and out of my thoughts, overriding the worst of my reservations. I must have sighed, because both of the stewards turned to me, mirror images of interest.
Actually,
I said, my voice betraying the unsettling certainty working its way through me.
I think I do.
9. With the kids occupied with their planning, it wasn't difficult to slip downstairs unnoticed. I didn't need to look over my shoulder again and again to ensure that no one was watching as I unlocked the door of the old file storage room and stepped inside. It was how quickly my hand shot up to find the light fixture's cord dangling overhead, the way the darkness seemed to settle over my skin that made me stop myself. My breathing sounded harsh to my ears, and it was the strangest sensation, feeling my body slip into panic while my mind sat far back at a cool, reserved distance. My heart galloped, pounding out a beat that was too fast, too hard. Sounds that weren't there filled my ears. The world rolled up under me. Wasn't it just the way of the dark that with one sense gone, the others were amplified? The dark made small prickles of anxiety stretch and reshape to suit its needs, to trap you there, paralyzed. No wonder Jude had been so terrified of shadows. In a space this small, it was easy to imagine there was no escape. The rational part of me knew that there was nothing to be afraid of. There were two doors, two outs, but the only way through the darkness was to lean into it and just move. I could tell myself 1,000 times, but each time my whole self would feel the shock of it all over again. Because the dark was where things were lost, it devoured everything good. This is not Los Angeles. I pressed back against the memory of dust and smoke. This is not the tunnel. I pressed back against Jude's face, his pleading voice. This is now. I pressed and pressed and pressed. I stayed there as long as I could physically stand it before tugging on the cord. The pale yellow light flooded the air around me, revealing the clouds of loose dust kicked up from the barren shelves, rising, falling, spinning. I focused on that until my breathing evened back out, and there was nothing to be afraid of besides the monster on the other side of the door. It didn't matter how long I needed to refocus and steel myself. It was time well spent. Going in with scattered, distracted thoughts would be like walking into the room and handing Clancy Gray a loaded gun. And this time, I hadn't brought Cole back up with me. He was flat on his back on the cot again, throwing something, a plastic sandwich bag crumpled into a ball, up into the air, catching it, throwing, catching, throwing, catching, all while whistling the cheeriest little tune. At the sound of the door's lock clicking back into place, he caught it one last time and craned his neck to look at me.
"I have a theory I'd like to have confirmed," he said. "The agents who were here left, didn't they?"
"They're around," I lied.
"Strange, then, that I haven't heard them. Just the kids."
He pointed to the air vent above him by way of explanation.
"They must have been gone before you even arrived. And the others, what, they abandoned you? Just didn't show up?"
My silence must have been confirmation enough.
"That's fantastic news!"
His voice was so genuine, so excited.
"You're better off without them. Is the plan still to attack the camps? Did you find the information on Thurmond?"
There it was again. He kept dropping the same little bomb, waiting for me to pick it up, to agonize over it. I crossed my arms over my chest to hide the way my hands couldn't seem to stop trembling.
"What about it? What's happening?"
"Clancy, you really want to pretend we're on the same team?"
"Aren't I basically the mascot?"
he said, his mouth curving in an imitation of a smile.
"Try to avoid insulting me if you're coming in here looking for me to do you a favor. Don't think for a second I don't know that you need me to help you track down more kids for your adorable little brigade. If you want the information, you'll have to retrieve it yourself."
My patience had been worn down to the width of dental floss in the span of 2 minutes. Clancy Gray got off on driving people to the edge and watching them throw themselves over, though, so I wasn't going to give him the pleasure.
"Where did you leave the files? Colorado? Back in Virginia?"
"Not files, and closer than you think,"
he said, raising his eyebrows.
Come on, don't play dumb. You know exactly what I mean.
I did. You really are sick in the head, I told him.
You're just going to block me out. Is that how you're going to make yourself feel better about all of this, by watching me embarrass myself?
You seemed to manage breaking into my memories just fine in Colorado, and in that Los Angeles rat hole you called HQ. Why no confidence now? He taunted.
I knew him better than he thought I did. I'm bored, is what he was really saying. Entertain me.
I'm surprised you have confidence left, I said, considering what happened in Los Angeles.
I really loved seeing all of those precious memories of you and your mom. You were kind of a crybaby, weren't you? His brows drew together, assessing. For a moment, I wished I hadn't brought up Lillian Gray. It was too early to signal to him that I had an interest in her. Too early to so much as hint she was on my mind. I needed a strategy if I was going to try to suss out her location and what, precisely, her son had done to her. I kept my expression neutral, my breathing even. You've done it before, Ruby. It was always easier to slide into someone's mind after I'd already created a path there. But both times, I'd had to catch him by surprise to do it. I'd been so damn furious in each case that if my hit had been physical and not mental, I was half convinced I could have taken out a cement wall. He blinked, and I let the invisible hands unfurl at the back of my mind. By the time his dark, thick lashes were rising again and his gaze met mine, their nails had turned to hooks, waiting to latch on. The block from Clancy felt like I'd slammed face first into the glass wall between us. I cringed, fighting with everything I had not to bring a hand up to rub at the center of the pain right between my eyes. A dull headache flared to an outright piercing throb.
"You're rusty," he said, surprised. "That was borderline pathetic. When was the last time you tried this?"
"Shut up," I thought, trying to keep my pride in check.
"Would you rather we talked like this?"
His voice bled through my mind, his lips never so much as twitching. He'd done this to me once before, at East River, as a friendly challenge. The sensation of it was exactly the same. It felt like there were 1,000 moths trapped beneath my skin, their wings brushing and beating until I had the urge to scratch them out by force. I was rusty, but there was a difference between being down and being out. Clancy had to constantly feed his confidence with moments like this in order to support the weight of his ego. I'd been counting on that trademark smugness, his unwillingness to accept that he was anything less than the most powerful person in the room.
Come on, asshole.
I wanted him to really believe, even for a moment, that my abilities weren't just like a muscle I hadn't flexed in weeks. I wanted him to think I was hopeless. I shook my head, forcing what I hoped was a frustrated, upset expression onto my face. I had the advantage of him already assuming that his blow would be lethal to my own pride. I could see it in his face. He thought he was torturing me by forcing me to use my abilities, and he was enjoying the struggle, relishing the sight of me trying and failing. That was one way to feel powerful while locked up behind 3 inches of bulletproof glass, I guess. My abilities were practically purring inside my skull in anticipation. It took strength I didn't know I had not to laugh, to hold that look of fury and annoyance. I just needed a single moment of him being thrown off balance. Just one. But it was like finding a way to land a hit on a guy standing behind a cinder block wall. As with any fistfight, though, however unfairly stacked it was in one corner, there were tricks. Dirty cheats. I wasn't above it, not by a long shot.
Sorry, couldn't resist. Ready to go again?
Clancy crossed his arms over his chest, glaring at me from behind the glass.
My only request is that you actually pretend to try.
When he smiled again, I smiled right back. This time, I threw my abilities at him like a fist, aiming for the blank white curtain he threw up again to guard his thoughts. I slowed my assault,
letting him sweep that same curtain forward to maneuver me right back out of his headspace. His own power brushed against mine like the soft stroke of knuckles against a cheek. I reached over and unlocked the door to his cell, propping it open with my foot. Clancy jerked back, startled, and that great white nothing that had masked everything working behind his eyes lifted, just enough for me to slide into the twisting hallways of his mind. The colors were suddenly vivid as jewels, pristine emerald lawns, a home perched next to a sapphire sea, a flowing amethyst evening gown, camera flashes like the sun striking the surface of a diamond, dissolving the world in flashes of pure light. I worked faster than I ever thought I'd be able to, flipping through each memory as I stepped back and shut the door to his cell again, flipping the heavy lock. The win was short-lived. Clancy's memories and thoughts had always passed through my mind like thunderclouds, expansive, brimming with darkness, and always on the edge of bursting. Now they were overly bright and crisp. Still, too, like I was flipping through a stack of photographs, not trying to navigate the winding, endless paths that each memory sent me on. I felt myself coasting, carried along by a firm grip. Someone else was at the wheel. The cell, detention hall, they were ripped back from the edge of my vision in one sharp tug. A layer of reality gone, just like that. And in its place was an old, familiar scene. Clancy's back was to me as I stepped toward him, letting the room solidify around us. Dark wood everywhere. Shelves that blossomed with books and files. A TV appeared in the corner and burst to life with a flash of silent color. A desk appeared in front of where Clancy sat, his hands poised in the air until the laptop appeared beneath his moving fingers, papers growing up from the surface of his desk in neat white stacks. He must have left the window open. The white curtain he used to separate his bed from the rest of the office fluttered at my back, and the memory was clear enough for the sound of the kids at the fire pit below to drift up to my ears. A soft breeze brought in the damp, earthy scent of the nearby trees. I shuddered. We were at East River. The memory was moving now, throwing me forward with a lurch, but it was only at half speed. I stepped up behind where Clancy was working, dividing his attention between his father's face on the TV set and the laptop in front of him. I sucked in a sharp breath, and even though the rational part of my mind knew that none of this was real, I wasn't here, and Clancy wasn't actually here, I still couldn't bring myself to touch him, not even to lean over his shoulder. How is he doing this? This wasn't a memory. It was something else entirely. It was walking onto a stage after a play had already begun. I'd crossed whatever barrier had kept me an observer, not a participant. He took a deep breath, unbuttoning the collar of his shirt with one hand, typing in a web address. A password. The Clancy sitting in front of me sank down in his chair, tilting his head back so he was looking up, almost like he was looking right at me.
"Did you get that?"
he asked. I shot out of his mind, dropping the connection before he could seal me in? Was that even possible? Could he? The lights crackled back to life in the hallway, burning my eyes with a sudden intensity. I knew my head was still tripping, still locked in that initial panic, because all I could smell was that pine, the distant campfire smoke. He'd moved back to the bed, reclaiming his makeshift ball. And it was so strange. Once the memory cleared and the ground felt solid under my feet again, I wasn't scared or even pissed off that he'd managed to wrest control away from me in the end. I was curious. I'd never experienced him walking me through a memory in that way. At East River, he'd shown me memories of himself that he'd stitched together, but this was so different. I had no idea that was even a possibility for us. The throbbing ache behind my eyes had disappeared, and, for the first time, the dive into his head didn't leave me exhausted or disoriented. I was still riding on that initial high of overcoming his barrier,
just for a second.
See you tomorrow, Ruby,
Clancy said, tossing the plastic wrapper back up into the air. And as I walked out, clearly dismissed from his presence, I had the strangest feeling of lightness spreading through my chest, sparking and trembling and glowing. I'd held back the monster for too long, apparently. It needed to be let out, to stretch its legs, to remember how good the control felt. I remembered now how good being in control felt. I think I might have even enjoyed it. There was one laptop left in HQ, and despite the number of greens salivating to get a turn on it, their unspoken code of honor seemed to dictate that the kid Kate entrusted to it got ownership of it, or at least first dibs. So, at any hour of the day, you could find Nico working at the desk in the center of the otherwise empty computer room. Sometimes there was a small cluster gathered around him, crowding in over his shoulders and pointing at the screen, typing something in for him if he so much as leaned back.
"Those kids make vultures look like fluffy yellow chicks,"
Cole said as we stood outside, watching them through the long glass window.
"If he were to fall over dead, would they just push the body out of the seat and use it as a footrest, do you think?"
I snorted. "They're bored. If we don't give them something to work on, they're going to start taking the electronic locks off the door to try turning them into cell phones."
"Yeah, well, Connor is the one that's supposed to be wrangling them. You and I sure as hell don't have the patience for..."
A green girl let out a squeal as Nico surrendered the laptop to her.
"This..."
I had somehow managed to get through the day without letting my thoughts turn back to Kate and that expression on her face when she'd realized what Cole and I had done. "Has she checked in yet?" I asked. Cole rocked back on his heels, a crease forming between his brows.
"Nope."
She should have listened to us. I hadn't realized the words were out of my mouth until Cole dropped a comforting hand on my head.
"Mark my words, Jim. Connor will come crawling back tomorrow, tail tucked between her legs when they reject her. This'll be good for her. Everyone needs reality to punch them in the face every once in a while. Keeps you on guard."
But that was just it. I didn't want her knocked down like that. My anger had shallow roots. It had hurt me when she left. I didn't have enough pride to act like it hadn't. But I could understand her decision. That instinctive need she always had to mend fractures and soothe jagged edges. Kate couldn't understand that the others would gladly abandon us, use us, hurt us, because she'd never once considered it herself. To have that be our first and only conversation since we'd arrived at the ranch, that was quietly killing me. I'd let her down so horrifically in Los Angeles, betrayed every last trace of trust she'd put in my ability to protect our team. I should have forced myself to say something to her before she left, any small conversation to start working my way back to her. Maybe it was too late now, and I'd missed my chance of trying to make things right between us. That single poisonous thought made me feel like I'd been turned inside out, dragged against the ground. I just didn't know what to say. How an apology could ever be enough for her to forgive me. How do you pour the weight you feel crushing your chest into two little words? "I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." "I'm sorry" wasn't enough, not for losing him. It echoed hollowly in the space he'd left behind. "I'm sorry" didn't balance out all of the things he could have and would have been. Cole gave a friendly wave to one of the green girls, Erica, who glanced over. She went bright pink and ducked back down, blocked from sight by Nico. The ghostly blue light from the computer screen gave him the look of a half-frozen corpse. The lines of his face seemed deeper, harsher, the longer he concentrated. "I don't think this is a good idea to have him access Clancy's server," I said quietly. "His judgment is impaired where Clancy's concerned."
"Your reservations have been noted, Jim, but he's our man on this. I'm willing to bet on him. Nico has the most to prove. He won't let you or Kate down again, not if he can help it."
The if he can help it part is the problem.
Hey now, you got to plead Lee's case. I get to do the same for Nico, and it's your turn to deal.
Liam didn't give confidential information about the organization to the enemy's son, the same person who then not only betrayed us and him, but also possibly destroyed our one shot at a cure. I turned my back on the scene in front of me, leaning against the glass.
Right, but if he hadn't involved Clancy, if you hadn't been tricked into coming back, we wouldn't even know a cure existed.
I stared at him, momentarily speechless.
Didn't think about it that way, did ya?
Cole shrugged.
The loss. It opens a hole in you. A goddamn black hole at the center of your world. It sucks in your thoughts before you even have time to stop and examine them, and it's always hungry for more. It doesn't hurt any less to weigh what you lost against what you gained, does it?
I shook my head. After a moment, I kicked myself off the wall, holding out the piece of paper I'd used to write down the server and password information I'd seen in Clancy's mind. Cole took it wordlessly, glancing down at my scrawl.
Hey, Ruby,
he said quietly.
The thing is, what they don't tell you about forgiveness is this. You don't give it for the other person's sake, but your own.
Who'd you steal that one from? I asked.
That one's courtesy of having lived and learned.
I rolled my eyes.
Oh, I'm sure.
My mind couldn't finish the thought. It was there, then gone, just like the shadows that passed in his eyes. The recovery was just as quick. Cole's eyes jumped from me to the floor, and then the smile he forced onto his face was actually painful to witness. After a moment, he shrugged, his arms coming up and crossing over his chest. He was daring me to say something about it, and the longer I didn't, the harder it was for him to stand there, stand still. I saw the moment that vulnerability welled to the surface inside of him. The uncertainty of the moment made him look young, like a boy standing there waiting for some kind of punishment to be delivered.
"Who did you have to forgive?"
I asked. It wasn't my business, I knew that, but his reaction had left my chest hollow. I wanted to know. I wanted him to tell me, to ease some of the weight of whatever it was off him, just for a second.
It's not... Listen, it doesn't matter. Just think about it.
He fumbled for the words, raking his hand back through his cropped hair. There were so many possible answers to my question. His parents for not seeing what he was, Liam for giving him a hard time, the remnants of the League for turning their backs on him. I knew about all of that, and the fact he wouldn't say, wouldn't so much as look at me, told me it had to be something and someone else. It had to be much worse than what I'd imagined. Cole had become so good at slipping into the armor of charm he always wore that I'd let myself be distracted enough to miss the signs of real turmoil beneath. He didn't trust anyone with the truth of exactly how deep the pain cut, did he? Maybe in time he could confide in me, and I could be for him what Liam and the others had been to me. They hadn't let the grip of Thurmond, of what I was, drag me back into a small, lonely existence.
All right, I said,
taking the paper back from him and pushing him into the room.
Come on.
Nico had to look up and then look again for his mind to accept that I was the one standing in front of him.
Can you download the files from this server? I asked.
He stared at me long enough that I felt an itch to fidget.
Yeah, sure, no problem,
Nico mumbled, taking the paper. The Greens had backed away from his chair to make room for us, but edged closer in curiosity as Nico brought up a series of screens. The strange code that formed the computer's language began to scroll by.
Hey, guys,
Cole said in his best buddy-buddy voice.
Can one of you go grab the senator from her quarters and send her our way? The rest of you would absolutely be my heroes if you went and helped poor Lucy scrape together dinner.
They were too smart not to figure out they were being dismissed, but none of them seemed to care. On the screen, a window popped up, and a half dozen folders appeared.
What was that for? I asked when the last green had slipped out and shut the door behind him. Cole silently pointed down at Nico, who'd gone so still in his chair it wasn't clear if he was breathing. His shoulders sank, rolled down and forward, like he wanted nothing more than to curl his ends together like an old piece of paper and disappear.
"Nico, my man,"
Cole said with that same casual voice.
"Do you think you could go?"
"I'm not going to go."
I had to strain my ears to hear him.
"Maybe you could..."
"I'm not going to go,"
Nico said firmly, and clicked on the first of the file folders. It was only when the bigger folder opened that I saw the label. Thurmond. There were maybe 50 files total inside of it, a mixture of videos, photos, and scanned documents. Nico navigated across the screen, releasing his breath harshly. The cursor hovered over one of the images. Somehow, even before he opened it, a part of me knew what face would appear on the screen. He had always seemed younger than he actually was, but the image of Nico as a boy, an actual young child, drove into me with all the gentleness of a spike. His dark hair had been shaved down to black fuzz, and his normally rich, tan skin was the color of cement powder. It contrasted sharply with his dark, expressionless eyes and the scars still healing along his scalp.
"Oh, God,"
I thought, a sick feeling slamming into me.
"Oh, God."
Nico at 17 stared at the child like he was a stranger. This was the hell he'd had to climb out of, and he wasn't running from it. He wasn't even turning his back on it. A slow, grudging respect pooled inside of me as I watched him hold it together when I felt like I was one wrong image away from shattering. Thurmond. This was Nico at Thurmond. The camp's early years had been dedicated to researching the cause of IAAN, but had expanded as the years went on. Before I ever set foot there, Leda Corp had taken over that branch of research and moved those original test subjects, kids, to their facility in Philadelphia. Cole had been in deep cover at Leda, trying to turn up valuable intel on the research they'd done on the kids. And it had been Cole who had managed to ultimately extract Nico by secretly supplying the method of doing so to Alban. After Clancy had gotten himself out of Thurmond and left all of the other kids behind.
"You okay?"
Cole dragged one of the nearby chairs over so he was right beside him. After a moment, I did the same from the other side.
"You don't have to see this,"
Cole added.
"Ruby and I can go through the files."
"These are... his, aren't they?"
Cole and I exchanged a look. He nodded.
"If he has the files on the Thurmond testing program,"
Nico said,
"he might have some information on here about the cause of IAAN, or at least what they ruled out. This is..."
Nico took a shuddering breath in and released it before closing the photo and moving out of that folder entirely, back to the full list.
"It's good. If we get something out of it, it's good."
Senator Cruz stuck her head in, and Cole waved her over, giving up his seat as he quickly explained what we were looking at.
"My God,"
she breathed out, leaning closer as Nico opened the folder labeled Federal Coalition. Her discomfort grew exponentially when he pulled open the document with her name. There were hundreds, literally hundreds, of profiles spread out among the folders. PSFs, men and women in President Gray's inner circle, Children's League agents, Alban, and kids, including myself, Liam, and Chubbs. In the latter case, he'd clearly pulled the original files from the PSF and Skip Tracer networks and expanded on them with his own new section, Observations. His observations of me? Indecisive when making a decision that affects only her. More confident in dealing with others close to her to the point of being overly protective. No real vices, doesn't enjoy sweet foods, enjoys older music, related to memories of father, allows herself one unrealistic hope of finding her grandmother. Desperation for closeness and intimacy means response to overtures of friendship. Tease out thread of physical attraction.
gullible, not vindictive, forgives too easily.
My jaw set in irritation and embarrassment at the less than flattering assessment.
Forgives too easily? We'd see about that.
Here, that's the one. Tribes, I said. Open that one.
Tribes? Senator Cruz asked.
That's what Clancy called the groups of kids who left East River. The safe haven. Well, not really a safe haven in the end, but that was his claim. Whenever a group of kids left, he'd send them off with supplies.
And the road code to communicate safe routes to each other.
I'd wondered, more than once, how many of these tribes had left East River together before we arrived there. And now, I had my answer. 12. Most in groups of 5 or 6. The grid was divided into columns by group, with dates and locations listed under each header. I had Nico scroll across until he found the listing for Zoo's group. There were 2 updates beneath it, one in Colorado, one in California. The last update was a month ago.
He knew where she was.
Or at least that she had made it out west. I gripped my hands together behind my back to keep from giving into the urge to punch the screen. He'd known. That whole time I'd felt hopeless about ever finding her again.
How did he get these updates?
Cole asked.
This is gold, but only if the information is good.
He told me once, Nico started to say. I felt, rather than saw, his eyes dart to me for a moment. His voice was soft again when he continued.
There was a number that they could call and leave status messages, or ask for help. He said he sometimes helped one group find another if they were feeling scared to be out on their own in smaller numbers. He knew everything.
I didn't doubt that. There was so much information here, we'd have to spend the next few days weeding through it. Our cursory glance through had turned up absolutely nothing about Lillian, not that I had expected it to.
Can you go back to the Thurmond folder? I asked.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Senator Cruz press a hand against her mouth and start to rise.
All of the camps. Are they all like that?
She asked.
It's sort of like comparing rotten apples,
Cole said, and I knew he was assessing her reaction the same way I was.
They're all bad, but some of them make the others look appetizing.
What's the most recent file in the folder? I asked Nico. Can you tell?
Yeah, it's this one.
The fire evacuation plan?
Senator Cruz clarified. We'd already looked through the document, seen the maps marked with the order in which the PSFs and camp controllers would clear out the cabins in the event of an emergency. The other files were on PSF personnel and materials on the research conducted in what I knew was called the infirmary. None of which featured Clancy himself, of course. If evidence had existed, he would have found a way to destroy it rather than let anyone see him so powerless. Clancy kept dropping hints that there was something going on.
And you're sure he wasn't just baiting you to get a rise out of you?
Senator Cruz patted my shoulder.
His father loves playing that game with people.
Nico was just about to close the file's window when Cole sucked in a sharp breath and said,
Wait, scroll back up.
Cole's eyes narrowed and his hand came up to rub along his unshaved jaw. I looked between him and the screen several times, trying to see whatever it was he was seeing.
Damn,
Cole said softly. I felt something heavy drag down my stomach.
What?
They're moving kids out of the camp in this scenario. But if there were a fire, then why not move the kids to the inner rings until it's contained? Or why not herd the kids to the boundaries of the camp? The thing is like a mile wide, right? And why only account for one scenario? What happens if the fire is in the mess, or the work facility? We just assumed it was an emergency plan based on a bunch of arrows and numbers, but there's nothing on here to indicate that that's what it is.
If it's not an emergency action plan, then what is it? I asked.
I think it was an evacuation plan, in the event of the camp's location being compromised, or if Gray was taken out or overthrown. But look,
I leaned forward. He was pointing to the small text at the top of the page. The word amended was listed next to December 10th of the previous year. The date struck through beside it was from almost 5 years earlier. Cole took control of the mouse and scrolled down again.
They've labeled this with the operational name Cardinal. And here, I thought the numbers next to each cabin referred to how quickly, by the minute, the PSFs needed to reach them. But 301 could be March 1st, couldn't it?
Wait, I said. Wait, what does it mean, then?
It means that they're not evacuating the camp, Nico said, his voice small. They're moving the kids out. 4 cabins each day.
Am I wrong in assuming that the only reason they'd move the kids out is if they were closing the camp?
Senator Cruz asked.
There was another file labeled Cardinal, Cole said. Yeah, that one. The list of the small camps.
And the PSF personnel transfer list, I said. Oh my God. I pressed my hands against my face and forced myself to remember to breathe. The room was shrinking around me, tightening and tightening around my shoulders as the possibilities solidified into something real. They're closing the camp.
Sweetheart, are you all right? Senator Cruz asked.
I don't understand. Isn't it a good thing? From what you've told me about the conditions in the camp.
If you look at it that way, it is a blessing, Cole said. But raising the camp likely also means moving or shredding all of the hard copy records on site. Not to mention, the camp can't serve as evidence of the cruelty of the rehab program. The camp is a powerful symbol. It's the oldest, the largest, and, I'm going to venture a guess here, really sets the bar for abuse and mistreatment.
Separating the kids. The cabins. My throat was dry. Most of them had been together for almost 10 years. They were each other's families, and they wanted to take even that from them?
All right, so that's one camp out of contention.
Senator Cruz leaned back against her seat and folded her hands in her lap. What are the other potential big hits?
There is no other big hit, Cole said. We're still going after Thurmond. It's our end game.
I looked up. Shock must have registered on my face because confusion spread across Cole's.
Really, Jim? I must have said it 10 times this morning. Thurmond, no matter what. What's with that look?
I moved back through my day, trying to remember. It must have been after we finished training, or before Liam and the others had returned. The whole morning had a strange, glossy sheen to it, as if exhaustion was clouding my memories like steam on a mirror. As if tracking my thoughts, Cole said,
Damn, kid, we need to get you more sleep.
Is 5 weeks enough time to pull something like this off?
Concern creased Senator Cruz's face.
We'll make it work,
Cole said simply.
You asked them to write up proposals for a mission, correct?
Senator Cruz asked.
I don't mean to be insulting, but how in the world are these children supposed to come up with plans for a successful military operation and then execute it?
We received training, I told her, to do exactly that. At least those of us who were with the League. We need to have time to work with the other kids. Bring more in, make sure they can function under pressure.
Cole reached for the small stack of papers he'd collected from the groups and passed them to her.
I'm impressed with some of their imaginations. There's a lot of good stuff here. The Greens really put the best of the League to shame with some of this. I definitely wasn't expecting to get statistical probabilities of success, or...
He squinted at the page he held.
Christ, I don't even know what that word means. In any case, before we hit Thurmond, we'll have to do a test run on a smaller camp first. Make sure the plan is viable.
The senator sat up a little straighter. Any camp?
Preferably one on this coast, but yeah, sure. We'll try to match a smaller camp with the layout of Thurmond. Get an experience as close as possible to the real deal.
Nevada. Cole leaned against the desk, his eyes lighting up with excitement.
Are you thinking of Oasis?
Oasis? The League had kept a map of the United States posted on one of the hallways, all of the known camps, big and small, marked with thumbtacks. I closed my eyes, trying to picture the pastel spread of states moving east to west. It was in the northeast corner of the state. Remote. Nico didn't break his gaze from the laptop screen.
That's the one with the children from the Federal Coalition.
Senator Cruz nodded, swallowing hard, and brought up a hand to rub against her throat. She looked at some point past us, at the clock on the wall, maybe.
My daughter, Rosa, is one of them. I put her in hiding with her grandmother, but Gray was determined. He hired men specifically to find our children, to make an example of all of us. I know of at least 10 other Federal Coalition officials who believe their children were taken there. Knew of. God. Is there a chance any of those people are still alive in the detainment camps? Will they ever get to see their children again?
Sure, Cole said, not sounding entirely convinced himself. There's always a chance, right? But regardless of whether or not their parents are still alive and kicking, they'll have a place with us. A chance to fight if they want it. Lord knows they don't have anything else to go back to in Los Angeles.
Nico shoved his chair back and stood, his hands coming up to clutch at his elbows. His eyes were darting around, creating a scattered path across the room, trying to land on everything but us.
I'm going to go shower.
He couldn't have left the room faster if it had been on fire. I wondered if he even felt the sharp stab of pain as his hip checked one of the desks and sent him stumbling forward. I took a step to follow him out, but caught myself. Cole raised his brows, his eyes sliding over to meet mine in a silent question. I shook my head. No, I wasn't going to go after him. I could feel guilty about forcing him to relive that time in his life for a few minutes, but I wasn't going to comfort him or try to shield him from his own horrific memories of Los Angeles. How could I, when part of me was glad that he was just as miserable over it as I was? You didn't drop the bombs on the city, I thought. But neither had he. Nico hadn't planned the attack carried out by the military. He hadn't been responsible for the agents overthrowing Alvin in a bloody midnight coup that fractured the League forever. He hadn't. I pressed the heel of my palm against my forehead. I didn't want to think about this now. It was like prodding a swollen, angry blister that hadn't popped yet. I needed to focus on Thurmond, on the fact that, apparently, we had less than 2 months to not only gather supplies, but find additional kids, train them, figure out transportation, get to Nevada, get back from Nevada. The impossibility of it rose over me. A mountain that only stretched higher and higher into the sky the closer I got to it.
We'll meet with everyone tonight to settle the plan, Cole was saying. We'll clarify the goal we're working toward, focus everyone's energy. In the meantime...
Yes, of course. I'll make contact with the Canadians, see what they might be willing to do for us about ammunition and gas.
Senator Cruz ran a comforting hand down my arm, then squeezed my hand. I barely felt it.
You are the queen of my heart, Madam Senator, Cole informed her with a devastatingly handsome smile.
Oasis, she reminded him, heading toward the door.
We'll meet in here at 7 sharp, Cole said. I'll have a plan ready for you.
She paused, turning back to look at him. It was there and gone faster than a blink, but I saw the moment she let herself hope.
Thank you.
I waited until she was gone before leaning forward and resting my head against one of the empty desks. Closing my eyes didn't make the headache any better. In fact, the glassy film over my thoughts thickened as I turned my mind back in the direction of Thurmond. I felt myself sit up, suddenly flooded with images of men in black uniforms tearing the camp down before I could do it, destroying every last piece of evidence before the world could see what had really happened there.
Ruby?
Cole was waving at me from further down the row of computers, an odd expression on his face.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I said, rubbing at my irritated eyes.
Why?
You just were staring around the room, but you didn't.
I was alert again, at least, pulling myself out of the slow, dulled, shapeless thoughts I'd sunken into.
I'm fine, I interrupted him. So, the plans, the ones the kids made? You've read them?
Yeah,
he said, slipping into Nico's seat in front of the laptop and clicking around.
They're not bad, but I seem to remember a better one.
Whose?
Yours, he said pointedly. You put together a whole plan for hitting Thurmond, remember? Gave it to Albin, behind Connor's back.
I had, hadn't I? 3 months ago might as well have been 3 years ago at this point. When they'd taken my plan and twisted it, wanting to use it to arm kids with explosive devices and send them into camps, it had been like they'd cut off my legs at the knees. They'd turned a dream into a nightmare.
This thing about Thurmond, it sucks. I know that's a crappy word to express the magnitude of how terrible it is, but it just plain sucks, and we're going to have to work harder and faster now. We have until the beginning of March to get our act together. It would help to have a fully formed plan to run with so we can jump into action, the one you spent months thinking through.
Cole picked up a small notepad he'd tucked into the folder of handwritten plans from the other kids and tossed it to me.
Here, write it out. Everything you remember from your original idea. I'll work on combining everyone's ideas into something cohesive and realistic for tonight's meeting.
I found a pen in one of the desk drawers at the front of the computer room and sat down to write. The first words were halting, and I was self-conscious of the loops and uneven lines of my terrible handwriting. The longer I wrote, the easier it felt. The words came trickling back slowly, like they didn't fully trust that this time it would be different, that this was worth getting my hopes up for all over again. This is different. One kid enters the camp ahead of the assault with a tiny camera installed on a pair of glasses, so images of the interior of the camp can be relayed back to headquarters and the op strategy can be mapped out. Cole promised this would happen. We take their own transportation in, blindside the PSFs and camp controllers, subdue them without killing them. If you can't believe in this, then neither will they. We'll leave one camp controller free under my influence to report back in status updates until we're all away. It took up 10 whole sheets, front and back, and my writing got more and more illegible as excitement started fizzing in my blood again, and I could see each of these moments unfolding with perfect clarity. By the end, my hand was cramped, and I felt drained, but my head was clear. I did feel better. Calm, at least, which wasn't nothing. I stood up and turned back toward where he was still sitting. Every now and again I heard voices and sounds coming from his direction, and the part of my brain that wasn't distracted by my work knew that he was watching the videos we'd downloaded. The crying, the soft begging, the questions that never had answers. They were the kinds of things I'd learned to tune out at Thurmond for my own self-preservation. I don't know what it would have done to me to have nightmares every single night. The light from the screen flashed across his face, thrown onto the wall behind him. I lingered by my desk, caught by his bleak expression. Moving a few steps back, I was able to see what he was watching reflected in the windows lining the wall. Fire streaked across the screen. Cole glowed orange, red, gold, as the light from the video bathed him in deadly color. And just like that, my small slice of peace was gone, washed out by sudden, cold understanding. The hair on the back of my neck prickled. The video zoomed in on the face of a young boy, no more than 13, strapped to some kind of metal post. He was panting hard, thrashing against the restraints that trapped his arms against his sides. There were small electrodes dotting his shaved head, ringing his scalp with a crown of wires. Revulsion rose in me, bile burning its way up my throat. I pressed a hand against my face and had to work up the courage to watch the terrible truth of it. Cole glanced at me once as I stood behind him, then turned back to the screen. It was as much of an invitation as I was going to get.
He started the video again from the beginning, and it was that much worse to hear the Red's guttural sounds and screaming mixed with the scientist's calm, dry notations to the camera.
They were testing the kid to see what kind of emotional response triggers his abilities,
Cole said, staring at the last frozen close-up of the boy's face, streaming with sweat and tears.
Trying to map the way his mind processed it.
Ruby, he said, turning so his face was in profile.
After tonight, after we have our op strategy, I want you to do everything in your power to find Lillian Gray. Everything. Do you understand?
Yes, I said, finally finding the words as he started the video over again. I do. 10. I left the computer lab in another glassy daze, walking and walking with nothing but the images of all those kids trapped inside of my head. Burns, surgeries, blood being drawn, questions, so many variations of what's happening and why are you doing this? Even if my mind was checked out, my body at least knew where it wanted to go. This whole day had passed like a year spent underwater. I just wanted to go to sleep for a little while and try surfacing again later. The others had claimed one of the empty bunk rooms on the lower level. I had my own creaky bed and everything. Truthfully, though, I would have curled up in the corner of one of the halls on the cold tile, as long as it meant shutting my eyes for a little while. Someone clearly had the same idea. The overhead light was off, but a smaller, desk-sized one was on, perched on top of the crappy little dresser on the other side of the room. I hadn't realized how badly I wanted to see him until he was there, and a little glow lit at my center. Liam was sprawled across one of the bottom bunks on his stomach, his face turned away, his hands tucked up under the folded sweatshirt he was using as a pillow. His hair and back were still damp from the shower he must have taken. "Hey," I said, coming toward him. A small test of sorts to gauge his mood. If he wanted to be left alone, I'd turn and go without a second's hesitation. Instead, his shoulders, then the rest of his body, visibly relaxed. I dropped my knee on the free space at the edge of the bare mattress. His hand automatically moved to hook his arm around it.
"Hey yourself,"
Liam mumbled. He didn't sound sleepy, but he did sound wrung out.
"Time for dinner?"
"Not yet. How's the garage looking?"
"Getting there. You can see half of the floor now. That's an improvement, right?"
he said, finally lifting his head and turning toward me.
"Present for you."
I followed his gaze over to the dresser, where there was a square of clear plastic to the left of the lamp. I picked it up and laughed. It was a CD case. The Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. I popped it open, smiling at the liner notes and disc inside.
"It's like our song is following us everywhere,"
he said. He meant, "Wouldn't it be nice," the opening track. I smiled. "Our song?"
"Wouldn't it be nice if we were older?"
His soft voice trailed off into a hum.
"I figured you could use some pleasant background music to drown out the sounds of you and Cole beating the shit out of each other, if it's going to be an every morning kind of thing."
The warmth at my center evaporated. I closed the case, pressing it against my chest.
"How did you know?"
"The two of you were the only ones that showed up to breakfast with new bruises. It's not that hard to put two and two together."
He finally looked up at me.
"Please. Please be careful. The thought of him hitting you, pushing you around, it just makes me want to kill him."
"It's just sparring. I have to train."
"And you couldn't ask Vida?"
I felt myself heat up. "Are you implying something?" I didn't want to explain this to him. I shouldn't have to explain. It had nothing to do with him. I started to pull back, but his hand reached out again and caught mine.
"No, damn it. Of course not. I'm sorry. That's not the reason."
He closed his eyes and sighed.
"I found it in the car they'd stripped. It's glove box. I brought it because it made me think of you.
I reached over, placing it on top of the nearest dresser.